Graduation day is probably one of the most exciting days in all of our life. Whether it's graduation from high school or whether it's graduation from college or whatever the case might be, maybe some of you is graduation from kindergarten. I never quite understood graduation from kindergarten. I know it's cute and all, but I never quite understood it. But either way, we look forward. I doubt they look forward to that as much as, you know, maybe a cookie afterwards and not really understanding it. But we look forward to the day of graduating. You know, we feel as though we finally have accomplished something. We've gone through all these tests and all these trials over all these years, and finally now it's our day. You know, we get to move the tassel from one side to the next, and we walk the stage, and now we're looking forward to what our life holds in front of us. But you see, in the Christian life, there's the same excitement of a graduation day for the believer. Now, let me be clear on this. There's never a day that we graduate from tests and trials. We're going to have them the rest of our life, and I wish I could say that wasn't the case, but that is the case. However, there is a time where God takes us through many years when we first come to the Lord of training. Again, we've made the analogy of boot camp and going to battle, so to speak. We have to be prepared and ready for what God has called us to do. Joseph has been going through some intense training, some intense trials, some boot camp. Again, a lot longer than many of us have to go through. But you know, the reason is because God was going to use Joseph in greater ways. And I want to say this for some of you this morning. If you've been going through years and years of tests and trials and thinking, Lord, I feel like Joseph going through, you know, one pit to the next, one dungeon to the next, and waiting on you, knowing that you love me, that you've promised to use my life. And yet, Lord, when's it going to happen? It seems that other people spend a few years and they get thrown into some ministry and there they go. And yes, they have tests and trials like I do, but they didn't have to wait all these years for what it was you wanted to do in their life. You know, it might be because God's going to use you in greater ways than he's used other people around you. I look at Moses, and Moses, 40 years in the wilderness. I think, God, you know, 40 years, if you waited 40 years on me, I'll be dead. You know, I look at John the Baptist. He goes out into the wilderness and spends all these years and years away from his family and just seeking the Lord, and God uses him in a great way. We see Joseph. You know, years and years, you know, just waiting on God and all this. Daniel, years and years, you know, and God using Daniel, you know, yes, right off the bat. But again, there being sometimes long breaks before God ever really used Daniel in a big way again. And I want you to realize that when God is waiting in those times and God is getting you ready, he's molding and shaping and getting you ready for what he's going to do. So don't be discouraged if you feel you've been waiting on the Lord for a long time and nothing's happening. It might be that the very reason is because God is going to use you in greater ways. And then when that graduation day comes, it's an exciting day. And so we go through the different specific lesson plan that God has for our life. When we move from class to class and test to test, and when the time is right, God says, all right, now it's time to do what I'm going to do. And now we're going to, you know, I'm going to show you the reason of why you went through all this suffering and pain. And I think of Joseph, he must have wondered, why am I going through all this? You know, and then to realize as he looked back in hindsight to see, I know now why I went through this. And some of you can look back now in hindsight and see why you went through what you went through, because God was doing a work in your life. And sometimes it makes no sense until you get years down the road. And then you look back and you say, you know what? Now it makes sense. I understand it. And so again, sometimes we serve the Lord like Joseph did for many years and we don't see a reward. But then suddenly one day, God lifts us out of the dungeon. And he says, now it's graduation day. Now I'm going to use you for what I designed you to be used for. And so you're ready, you're prepared, and let's get going. So today we're going to see that Joseph remained faithful through thick and thin, through all these years of confusion. And then finally God says, all right, it's time now to pass the baton, to hand the graduation paper, so to speak, and now to get you into where you're supposed to be. And that's where we take up in chapter 41. Notice it says, then it came to pass at the end of 2 full years. And it's interesting, 2 full years. The word full there is interesting because it's almost as if the Holy Spirit is showing us, you know, this was not just 2 years. It was 2 full years. You ever had those? It's like waiting on Christmas when you're a kid. You know, it takes years and years and years, you know, to get there. And then now you're just kind of, you know, hoping you can finally somehow, you know, get your presents, you know, before the next one flies by and you're apologizing, you know, for being late again or whatever it is. The bottom line is that this was a long time for Joseph. And, you know, time, you know, it's like I saw this sign they have down here at Zaxby's. It says 1 minute depends on which side of the bathroom door you're on. You know, the bottom line is when you really want something bad, it takes a long time to get there, doesn't it? And when you don't care so much, it seems just to fly by. Well, this was 2 full years and Pharaoh had a dream. And behold, he stood by the river. Now, again, you know, Joseph had now spent 13 years in Egypt. We don't know how many years he was in prison. We know he was in prison the last time we saw him. We know that 2 full years went by since the last time we saw him. And he thought he was going to get out because he gave the interpretation to the butler and expecting that he would give him a good word and all that. But he's been 13 years as a slave and or a prisoner in Egypt. That's a long time. It's a very long time, especially when you, are finding yourself in those conditions. It's one thing to spend 13 years in a place you don't like. It's another thing to spend 13 years as a slave and a prisoner. And so Joseph now has spent these hard years, and again, the Lord has been doing this to mold and shape him. And no doubt he's probably beginning to think, my life's over. God's never going to use me. I'm going to rot in jail. I'm down here for nothing. Who's going to get me out? I mean, what, is Potiphar going to get me out? No, because then it makes his wife look innocent. You know, she's not going to confess anything because then she's going to be in trouble, and nobody's going to get me out. I'm here forever. I'm stuck. And no doubt that was the mindset. And yet Joseph made the best of his situation. We talked about that last week. But again, God had different plans for Joseph. And this is where we need to put on our spiritual glasses to realize that although we may think everything's done and everything's over and God's not going to move anymore in our life, we have to realize God does have future plans for our life. We have to simply be faithful and wait. And that's hard to do. And both of those are a 1-2 punch. They're a combo. You got to be faithful and you have to wait. And you have to trust the Lord. You know, I had many years of anxiousness as a young pastor. And I really can say that I'm in a place now to where I don't have that. And it's a very rewarding place to be. And that there's a peace in that that comes. And I think that Joseph, and I think that God has really used this portion of scripture to minister to me in our situation, because you know what? There's a rest that comes. After a certain amount of anxious years, you start to rest and say, you know what? I can't make anything happen whether I'm anxious or not. I'm going to rest and wait on God. And I think Joseph was sitting there going, you know what? Lord, I'm going to wait on you. I really believe that you've called me for something more, God. I really believe you're going to do something more than I dreamed or imagined. But you know what? Right now, you've got me in this place, and I'm going to wait on you. And there's a rest that comes in that. Listen, some of you right now are in that place where you've been anxious for a long time, and now God is saying it's time to rest. Lay it down and trust me. Don't get lazy. Don't lose your diligence. Don't stop praying, but just rest and wait on me. And God says, I'll do it. I think Joseph is in this place. And I think it's a place that God needs to get us all to again. And it's interesting, when it's time to move in Joseph's life, notice what God uses. He used dreams again. Pharaoh has a dream, and it seems that God works in Joseph's life in dreams. I don't know why, but he does. And suddenly there came up out of the river 7 cows, fine looking and fat. And they fed in the meadow. So now Pharaoh has this dream. He's watching the scene in front of him of these healthy cows standing there just feeding in the meadow. Probably a very pleasant dream at first. Then behold, 7 other cows came up after him out of the river, ugly and gaunt, and they stood by the other cows on the bank of the river. And the ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 fine-looking and fat cows. And so Pharaoh awoke. So it starts out kind of a nice little meadow, little cow in the field thing. And then these monster type cows come out, right? And they eat them all up, and he's having almost this nightmare. He probably wakes up, you know, maybe a little bit panicked, a little bit fearful, you know, and this kind of thing. And so now he goes back to sleep after this very strange and disturbing dream. And notice he slept and dreamed a second time. And suddenly, 7 heads of grain come up on 1 stalk, plump and good. And then behold, 7 thin heads, blighted by the east wind, sprang up after them. So again, we see this same kind of situation where he sees these stalks of wheat. Now, your Bible may say corn, but literally it's wheat here. Corn is what they called the head in the wheat in some translations. That this wheat comes up, and it's very healthy looking wheat. And all of a sudden, these ugly, you know, stalks of wheat come up. And they begin to eat up and swallow up these others. So it's the same type of thing. They're blighted by the east wind. And the 7 thin heads devoured the 7 plump full heads. So Pharaoh awoke, and indeed it was a dream. And so again, now he has this whole disturbing situation going on where he has these dreams. And you have to understand, the Egyptians in that day believed that when they had a dream, the gods were trying to speak to them. So if you had a dream, you're trying to figure out, what are the gods trying to say? Now, some of our dreams are so bizarre, you'd really get confused if you believe that today. You know, but the bottom line is, what are the gods trying to say? So these were very vivid dreams. They were obviously spiritual dreams. Pharaoh recognized these were supernatural. They were not normal. And now he's troubled. And notice, it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them for Pharaoh. Now again, who are the magicians and the wise men? You know, get the scene. He calls all the people of the, you know, this of Egypt, the magicians and wise men, to come and say, here's my dream. What does it mean? And the magicians of Egypt, they were known, what we would say today, they were the psychics. They were the mediums. That's what they were. They were the ones who supposedly had spiritual insight and can get in touch with the spiritual realm. And we've got them today. You know, you listen to the radio or you turn your TV on, you've got these people, you know, that are doing these things. These were the magicians and the wise men of the day. That's what their job was to do in this pagan culture that they had there. The problem was these dreams had no connection to their gods. These dreams had connection to the true God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And why do I say they had no connection to their gods? Guys, note this. There are true spiritual forces out there besides the true God. I think you realize that. The Bible says there's the devil and there's his fallen angels. They're the demons. And they can speak and they can act and they can move even like God and the angels can. And so when you see these mediums and these psychics and these things, and there seems to be some type of spiritual backing, and you know, maybe, you know, 5 out of 10 times they hit something right. The reason being for that is because the spiritual realm is behind them, but it's not God. It's a supernatural demonic realm that contacts these psychics, that contacts these mediums, that speaks through them, you know, and channels through them, so to speak, and tells them things that only the spiritual realm could know, that only the demons could know, or that God could know. And it amazes us because we're shocked by it. How could this be true? How could this really happen? That really came to pass. How did they know that about my closet? You know, how did they know what color I painted my wall? Yes, it was a dark color. And they may not get specific, but you hear these, I sense that you're whatever, and you painted your room in the past year and you painted it a dark color, and maybe on your east wall. Oh, I did. I did paint a dark color on my east wall. This is real, right? Listen, the demonic realm knows you painted your wall, and they know you painted it a dark color. And for those that will listen to their voice and be in tune, all they have to do is put that impression in their mind. And as they speak it, they amaze us because we can't imagine how anyone could know that. But when our eyes are not on the spiritual realm, we don't understand these things. When our eyes are open to the spiritual realm, we go, oh yeah, that makes sense. And so we understand there's a real power there. What's interesting, he brought these magicians, these wise men, these psychics, these mediums, these dream interpreters, if you will. They couldn't do it. Why? Because you see, none of their spirits influenced that dream. God had given this dream. And the demonic realm is limited in their power in that only what they know or are aware of can they speak. This was a dream from God that only God knew the interpretation. And so therefore, there's nothing they could say or do to amaze the Egyptians with. And so again, God, uses this in a particular way here to get Pharaoh's attention, to set Joseph apart so that he would realize Joseph's God knows this and no one else. And then the chief butler spoke to Pharaoh saying, I remember my faults this day. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, both me and the chief baker, we each had a dream in one night. He and I, and each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of our dreams. He said, wait a minute, you guys each had a dream? That's two dreams. Well, I had two dreams. Well, what happened? So now he's got Pharaoh's attention. He said, there was a young Hebrew man that was with us there. He was a servant of the captain of the guard. And we told him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each man, he interpreted each one according to his own dream. And so now he's really got Pharaoh's attention. And it came to pass, just as he interpreted for us, so it happened, he restored me to my office and he hanged him. And then Pharaoh would have remembered this. Yes, that's what happened. And so he sent and called, and they brought him quickly out of the dungeon. And he shaved and changed his clothes and came to Pharaoh. Now, a couple of things to note here. Notice he shaved and changed his clothes. First of all, here's Joseph. Now, let me just say this. Sitting in this dungeon and imagining that he's going to die and rot there. I'm going to be here forever, Lord. Nothing's going to change. Too many years have gone by. Nothing's happening. And here I sit. And we don't know exactly what was going on in Joseph's mind. But can you imagine when suddenly that knock at the cell door came, so to speak? Joseph, yes, here's some clothes. Change into them and go and shave. The Pharaoh will see you today. What? The Pharaoh's going to see me? Yes. He's had a dream and someone told him you could interpret it. And I imagine what was running through Joseph's mind as he went and he changed and put on, remember, he had on these prison clothes. He couldn't go before Pharaoh. He was going to the palace, the great world leader of the time. And he couldn't go in his prison clothes. So he puts on the new clothes they give him and he goes to shave. And that day the Egyptians were clean shaven. They not only shaved their faces, they shaved their hair. And so they would be bald and they would be shaved in face. And of course the Hebrews, and especially someone in prison, you know, he probably had a big beard and hair everywhere. It was all grown out. And so now he's got to go and shave all of that off before he goes and stands before Pharaoh. But I think about this is what was racing through Joseph's mind. No doubt thinking, you know, I'm going to be here forever. And suddenly he's going to go and stand before Pharaoh. And suddenly he's got his moment to get out. This is the opportunity he's been waiting for. And no doubt seeing God's hand in the midst of this. And here's what I want us to grasp. You see, what's exciting to me is although he didn't see it coming, it came suddenly and it did come. And some of you this morning, when you feel like you're stuck in that place, is God ever going to move? Is God going to get me out of my situation where I am? God's going to get you out of it. And when God gets you out of it, he's going to move in oftentimes a very rapid way. And there's the excitement that comes with that. It's like we said at the very beginning, is today our day? Is this graduation day? Maybe it is. Maybe there's something you're facing right now this morning that God's about to lift you out of, and you have no idea he's going to do it. And in your mind, you believe, I'm going to be here forever. I will struggle with this sin forever. I will be in this situation forever. I will never be released from this moment forever. And the Lord says, no, I'm going to do it, and it's my timing. And when he does it, it's an exciting thing, and sometimes a rather sudden thing. And now for Joseph, suddenly he's yanked from the dungeon and thrown before the Pharaoh. And notice it says, and Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, and there's no one who can help interpret it. But I have heard it said that you can understand a dream to interpret it. And notice this, so Joseph answered Pharaoh and said, it is not in me. Amazing. Now, I wonder what Pharaoh thought when Joseph said that. He's got all this big billing, right? You know, this guy, he's in the dungeon. He told our dreams in detail. It came to pass exactly. And Pharaoh's thinking, all right, this is the guy. This is my hope. Bring him up. He dresses him up. He shaves him up. He stands before Pharaoh and he says, I've heard about you. I've heard that you can interpret dreams. Tell me the interpretation. And the first thing Joseph says is, I can't do it. I love this. Why do I love this? Because notice he goes on and says this, God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. In other words, he says, I can't do it. And I wonder if Pharaoh's heart stopped for a moment. He said, but God can. And guys, this is a true sign of maturity and understanding when it comes to the things of the Lord. There is not one of us in this room that has some special ability that only God can use us. But there's also not anybody in this room that God can't use in a special way if we don't submit to him and allow him to. You see, here's what Joseph understood that we must understand as believers. Any gifting or ability that Joseph had to do anything came from God and from God alone. And God alone deserves the glory. And what Joseph is saying is, in his humility, and again, this is one of the characteristics of greatness, he was a humble man. And he understood that he didn't have any special ability. You know, it would have been easy to say, well, you know, years ago, I interpreted a dream for my brothers, and I'm still waiting on that to come to pass. But now as I stand before you, I believe that you're going to elevate me, and that'll take place. And I had a dream, of course, I interpreted a dream a couple of years back for a couple of your men, and it came to pass exactly as you said. And now you've come to the right man, Pharaoh. I'm glad that you've seen that. I was held back, but I'm certainly the one that you need to advance. And now what can I do for you? You see, he wasn't a big talker. He didn't lift himself up. He said, you know what? I know who I am. I'm made of the dust of the earth, and there's nothing in me that I have to offer, but my God can offer you more than you ever dreamed or imagined. And if you'll tell me the dream, I will allow my God to speak through me as he has brought me to this point, as he has trained me, as he has prepared me. And I'm going to allow him to do that, but it's all him. And it's nothing to do with me at all. And this is the kind of man that Joseph was. And this is the kind of man and woman that we need to become, you know, that humility and knowing that it's the Lord that does this. And we can't do it and anything of our own. It's completely up to the Lord. And so he says, God will give Pharaoh the answer of peace that he wants. But secondly, I want you to recognize that it's the boldness that Joseph has here. And again, this is another characteristic of maturity in the Christian life. And that is boldness. You know, I think about there's certain people that we might be able to share with. You know, maybe we could share with someone if the moment was right and we really, you know, had our courage up and we shared with them and it's a private thing or whatever. This was a public official. And not just any public official. This would be like standing before the President of the United States. And having him be an unbeliever and having him believe in other gods and having him call you before him to get an answer for something he needs. And you say, you know what? The God that you serve and all these gods, they have nothing for you, but the God that I serve, he can give you an answer. This was an incredibly bold thing that Joseph did. You see, they had multiple gods in Egypt. As a matter of fact, Pharaoh believed that he was a god as well. And they taught the society that Pharaoh was a god. And now this Joseph stands before Pharaoh and says, you know what? It's not the gods that you serve, nor is it you, Pharaoh, but my God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He will give you an answer. The God that I serve. And they all knew the Hebrews had a different God, you know, than the Egyptians did. They had their own gods. And he says, my God will be the one. And it's interesting here when he names God, he calls him Elohim. And the original language is the word Elohim. And why is that interesting? Because Elohim is the creator. In the beginning, Elohim, you know, created the heavens and the earth. That's the word that's used there. And now Joseph speaks to him about his God, not their gods, but his God is the creator of the universe. And by the way, in other words, he was saying, not only is it not your God, it's my God that created everything. He's over your gods and he's over you, Pharaoh. This is the God that will give you the answer. And so we see this incredible boldness that he had here before this high official in public. And not to mention that Pharaoh held his very life in his hands. Pharaoh could have put him to death. And yet he says, no, I'm going to tell you about my God, and my God did it in boldness. And that's another thing that happens with maturity is a boldness comes, and not only a boldness comes, you know, there's this thing that happens where you don't really care what other people think. I used to care all the time what other people think. It starts as a kid. You know, you go to school and you want to be cool, right? That wasn't supposed to rhyme, but it did. And you want to, you know, you do all the things you think that are going to make you cool, right? In front of all your friends and your peers. And then you get older and you got this same kind of thing at work and in life where you don't want to look foolish. Maybe you're not trying to look cool all the time. You know, I mean, you start mowing the grass in your dark socks and your dress shoes and shorts. You know, that's something that should never happen to anyone. And yet something happens. We have brain freeze when we get older and we do that. And we know that their neighbors are laughing at us the same way we used to laugh at the neighbors when we were kids, you know, watching that guy's out there in dress shoes and dark socks. Now we're doing it going, don't look, nobody look, right? I don't know what happens to us. But you know, part of it is we don't care anymore, do we? There's nobody we're trying to impress. And there's a neat thing about getting older in the Lord. You really don't care about impressing anybody, do you? You know, now I remember early on, especially early on, you know, in the Lord and all, there's people I looked up to and I wanted to impress them and I wanted to seem important, you know, and all this kind of thing and all. And God took me through a whole series of things with specific people that I really used to look up to and just completely humiliated me in front of them and also brought them down in my eyes in the sense of where I had them. And God said, you know, you need to quit worrying about what other people think, Mark. The fear of man is a snare. You've got to be bold. It's like God told Jeremiah, you know, Jeremiah was standing up and speaking the truth in his day in a nation where everyone was turning against God. The whole nation was turning. God was about to judge that nation. The whole nation was turning against God except for Jeremiah and Baruch, his right-hand man that was helping him in all that he was doing. And Jeremiah said, that's it. Every time I preach about God or say things that's true, Lord, everybody gets mad at me. I'm done. I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm tired of it. It's a lot easier just to be quiet. So I'm just going to be quiet. And it was Jeremiah in his youthful frustration, you know, wanting people to like him, not wanting to be the one that's always attacked. And of course, none of us want to be attacked all the time. But if you speak for the truth, you're going to be. And God spoke to Jeremiah and said, you know what, Jeremiah, if you can't run with the footmen, how are you going to keep up with the chariots? What are you going to do when the horses come? In other words, it's going to get a lot worse than this. This is small stuff. And, you know, God has to mature us and grow us to a place where we say, you know what? I'm scared to share with my neighbor and my friend and my family. God says, you know what? If you can't run with the footman, what's going to happen when you have to speak to Congress? What's going to happen when you get a camera in front of you and the city mayor asks you a question because there's been a terrorist attack in Knoxville, Tennessee? And, you know, you happen to be in some position where God gave you an opportunity to speak. What are you going to say? God's got to mature us. God, I'm not saying there's going to be one. God forbid. I hope there never is. My point is, we don't know what's going to happen in our lifetime, and especially the days that we live in, where suddenly there's going to be either a camera in our face that's going to reach the entire world or a world leader in front of us that's going to say, what is it about you that's different, and what do you have to say about this situation? And we're going to go, ha, 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 ha. Are we going to say, well, it's good to be nice, and everybody should just honor God? Or are we going to say, this world's in sin, and Jesus Christ said that if we don't repent, we'll be eternally condemned? And God is now judging us and warning us that we need to turn from our sin. And if we want any hope, we need to turn to God now. And we have to make a decision. What are we going to say? Joseph had to be in a place where God trained him and made him ready and got him through all this stuff where he said, I don't care anymore. I've been a slave. I've been in prison. What are you going to do? Throw me in jail? My God will give you the answer. You're wrong, Pharaoh. It's not your God. You're not God. It's not your way. My God. And I know he didn't go into all that detail, but by saying that my Elohim, he knew the name. When he said Elohim, Pharaoh would have said, I don't know an Elohim. I don't know these gods. He would have known this was a different name than any of the gods he knew. And yet Joseph says, no, it's not about you. It's not about me. It's about my God. And my God will give you an answer, but it's going to be from him. He's the one that sits on the throne. So he says, I can't do it. My God will. And then Pharaoh said to Joseph, behold, in the dream, I stood on the bank of the river and suddenly seven cows came up out of the river, fine looking and fat, and they fed in the meadow. And then behold, seven other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and gaunt, such ugliness as I have never seen in all the land of Egypt. And the gaunt and ugly cows ate up the first seven, the fat cows. And when they had eaten them up, no one would have known that they had eaten them. For they were just as ugly as the beginning. So I awoke. You know, they ate them up and still nothing was there. Also, I saw in my dream, and suddenly seven heads came up on one stalk, full and good. And behold, the seven heads withered, or rather seven heads withered and thin and blighted by the east wind sprang up after them. And the thin heads devoured the seven good heads, so that I told this to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me. And then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. Wow, I love it. He spoke authoritatively. He said, you know what? You've had these two dreams, but the images are different, but it's the same dream. God has spoken to you, Pharaoh. And now Pharaoh's ears are really perking up. He says, the seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good heads are 7 years. The dreams are one. And the seven thin and ugly cows which came up after them are 7 years, and the seven empty heads blighted by the east wind are 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I've spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. Indeed, 7 years of great plenty will come throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them, 7 years of famine will arise, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will deplete the land. So the plenty will not be known in the land because of the famine following it will be very severe. And the dream which was repeated to Pharaoh twice, or rather was repeated to Pharaoh twice, because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. Again, notice this. Whenever God speaks to us, he will always confirm it. We've talked about this through the whole process with Joseph and the dreams. And now we see again God speaking very clearly to Pharaoh, and now God establishing it, as he says, by two dreams. Now therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land to collect one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the seven plentiful years. And let them gather all the food of those good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. That the food shall be as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land may not perish during the famine. So the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of his servants. These guys, they recognized this is supernatural. They didn't necessarily believe in Elohim, the God of Israel, the true creator of all the universe. But they said, you know what? This guy not only is given an interpretation, but this is supernatural. We recognize the hand of God in his life. And when you are living for the Lord and speaking for God, people see it. They recognize it. And now Joseph sees, they see in Joseph this recognition, Pharaoh and the servants, and they say, you know what? He's not only able to interpret it, and we see God's hand in that, this guy has a plan to deal with it. God has given him wisdom. He says, here's what we need to do. Well, that's a great plan. I like that plan. And he says, you know what? Who else is going to be as wise as Joseph in this? And notice he says, and Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find such a one as this, as the man in whom is the Spirit of God? And Pharaoh said to Joseph, insomuch as God has shown you all this, and there is no one discerning as wise and as wise as you, then you shall be over my house. And all my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Wow. Now, I had no doubt Joseph was not saying all this to try to get position. He wasn't up there going, now, there's the interpretation. Here's what I would do. I'd pick some guy that, you know, can hear from God and that has a good plan in place. I'd put him there. Hint, 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 wink, wink, nod, nod, Pharaoh. Right? I don't think Joseph was thinking this at all. Joseph said, I'm a slave. I'm a prisoner. I got called up. God has given me this ability. There's the interpretation. But you know what? Here's what you need to do, Pharaoh. He was so humble. I don't think it ever crossed his mind that Pharaoh would go, you're the one. And suddenly Pharaoh goes, oh yeah, that's a good plan. I see God in your life and that's a great, you're the one to do it. I can imagine, what, me? I mean, I'm a prisoner. I'm a Hebrew. I'm a slave. Well, you want me to be the one? I can imagine the shock that must have been on Joseph's face. And suddenly it began to flood into Joseph's mind. I wonder how long it took to say, this is why, God. This is why I went through the years of my brothers hating me. This is why I was thrown into the pit and my brothers sold me into Egypt. This is why Potiphar's wife lied about me. This is why I've been in prison for all these years. You did this so that you could elevate me to this position. Oh, Lord, when all that was happening, I was miserable and I never dreamed it would be used for anything good. But I see your sovereign hand and, oh, are you good? That's exactly what God does in our life. He sends us through these times that we're in the midst of and we say, how could this be for good? How could all this pain and hurt and suffering, God, how could you use this? And God says, one day you're going to see. And when the time is right, I'm going to lift you up out of that dungeon. I'm going to say, you're the man, you're the woman, and I've called you to do this. And if we stay faithful, God will use us in a great way. I love it. And so Joseph, now again, you talk about a rags to riches story. It doesn't get any more dramatic than this. But you know what's amazing to me is that can you imagine after the news got out and Potiphar, remember, he worked for the king. He worked for the Pharaoh. He was there. Can you imagine Potiphar going home that day and sitting at the dinner table? And there's Mrs. Potiphar. So how was work today, honey? You're not going to believe what happened. What? Do you remember Joseph? Don't mention him at our table. He's now the second most powerful ruler in all of Egypt. And her heart must have fallen in her stomach when she realized the very man that I have accused falsely is now over me and could have me put to death if he wanted. And yet, do you ever hear a mention about Joseph going after Potiphar's wife? Do you ever even hear a mention of Joseph mentioning it? By the way, now that I'm in his authority, I have some things that need to be cleared up. There have been some political attacks. They're lies, and I'm going to be on Meet the Press tomorrow morning talking about Potiphar's wife as well as some other things. He said, God's called me to this, and I'm not going to lower myself to those that would attack and slander. I'm going to do what God has called me to do, and I'm going to raise the standard and the bar. This is how a man of God operates. He's not into personal attacks and revenge. He's into saying, you know what? I can have mercy because God had mercy on me. It's time to forgive. It's time to move on. And Joseph was a man we're going to see who was a man of forgiveness. And he was a man of mercy. And he was a man of grace. And again, this was not in and of Joseph himself. This was God working in Joseph's life as he took Joseph through all the tests and trials. And now all the fruit of this is coming yet to bear. And so again, we see this amazing thing going on here. And so again, notice it goes on and he says there in verse 42, then Pharaoh took his signet ring off his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. And he had him ride in the second chariot, which he had. And he cried before him, bow the knee. And so he set him before all the land of Egypt. If you had the signet ring, you basically had what you would make your mark in. You'd push it in wax or clay. And it was basically Pharaoh's signature. He's giving him all the authority. And now having everyone bow the knee to him. And Pharaoh also said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no man may lift his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphath-Paneah. And he gave him his wife as wife, Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. So Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. So Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh through all the land of Egypt. And notice this. This is interesting to me. Remember, we talked about Joseph being a type of Christ. Isn't it interesting that at 30 years old, he came into his ministry? And isn't it interesting that after his family, the Jews, rejected him, he took a Gentile bride in the land of Egypt? You today are that Gentile bride that Jesus Christ has taken for himself. Now that the Jews have rejected him, you are the Gentile bride that the Lord has taken to himself. And yet what's exciting is we see the story develop and go farther along. He's going to take his Jewish bride back. He's going to remarry the nation of Israel as he accepts his brothers and forgives them. But again, we see this whole picture that God's playing out in this episode of Joseph and what's happening in his life. And it says, now in the 7 plentiful years, the ground brought forth abundantly. So he gathered up all the food of the 7 years, which are in the land of Egypt, and laid it up in the food in the cities, and laid it up in every city, the food of the fields which surrounded them. And Joseph gathered very much grain as the sand of the sea until he stopped counting, for it was immeasurable. 7 years, that's a lot of grain. And to Joseph were born 2 sons before the years of the famine came, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, the priest, bore to him. And notice what he names him. I love this. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God has made me forget my toil and all my father's house. And Manasseh means making me forget. And the name of the second he called Ephraim, for he said, God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of affliction. And again, it means to be fruitful. Again, this is amazing to me when I see a man like Joseph, and what God is doing in his life. Because Joseph, if anyone had a reason to be bitter, it was Joseph. If anyone had a reason to live in his past and say, well, God can't use me because of my past, it was Joseph. And yet notice what he does. He says this. He says, you know what? God has made me forget my past. It's done. He named his first child Manasseh, which means forgetting. My past is gone. And then he names his second child fruitful, you know, which means, you know, God's going to use him in great ways. And again, there are so many people today in the body of Christ that feel they have to live in the past, or because of their past, they can't move forward and be used by God. Guys, we've got to leave the past behind. Paul said this in Philippians 3, verses 13 and 14. Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting. Note that. Forgetting those things which are behind, that is our past, and reaching forward unto the things which are before, I press toward the mark of the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. Here's what he's saying. I'm not going to live in the past. I know my family was abusive. I know that I was treated wrong by my family. I know that I was wrongfully accused and as a slave and thrown in jail. I know that all these things. I know I was accused of crimes I didn't commit. But rather than being bitter and rather than going to get all this kind of counseling on some couch in Egypt, Joseph said, that is my past. And I'm leaving my past behind, forgetting it, moving on to the upward call of Christ. There are so many believers today that never get used because they're living so much in the past and they're worried so much about their past that they can't be fruitful. Joseph says, leave the past behind. I'm done with it. I'm moving on. I'm going to be fruitful for God. Listen, every one of us, does anybody in here not have a dysfunctional family? Raise your hand. If you really don't have one, raise your hand. I'm not trying to embarrass you, but I'm saying no hand was raised. These are psychological terms that have gotten in our community. There are sin in our families. There is sin in our lives. Every one of us are not operating the way we're supposed to operate. But if we keep focusing on our past and saying, but this happened and that happened and I need all this and I need to keep looking at it and living in it, you will never be used in the future for God. Because you must first, and notice the order of the names he gave them. The first one was forgetting the past and the second one was Ephraim now being fruitful. And I promise you this, believer, you will never be fruitful for God until you leave the past behind, ever. Because your whole life will be lived in what happened to me, and this was what happened to me, and that's not right with me, and everything's on me, and all my past. God says, drop it. Forget it. I know it happened to you. So did it happen to everyone else. Maybe yours was a little bit different. Maybe even yours was a little bit more harsh. But you've got to let it go, and you've got to move on if you're ever going to be used and be fruitful for the things of God. And so he says, you know what? I've forgotten it. I'm moving on. Then the 7 years of plenty which were in the land ended, and the 7 years of famine began to come. As Joseph had said, the famine was in all the lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. So when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread, and Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, go to Joseph, and whatever he says to you, do it. And the famine was over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, and the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. So all the countries came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain because the famine was severe in the land. Guys, let me finish with this, a couple of things real quickly to wrap this up. Notice this, when they ran out of nourishment, when they ran out of bread, he said, go to Joseph. Again, what happens with Jesus as our type? Joseph as the type of Jesus. Listen, if you're starving spiritually this morning, you're only going to find your sustenance in Jesus. The same place that Pharaoh sent all the countries that came to his land, that is to go to Joseph, I send to you this morning. If you want the bread of life, you have to go to Jesus Christ. Because Jesus said, I am the bread that has come down from heaven. And he will give you life. Guys, are you living in the past? Do you feel like you're stuck in a dungeon? Maybe it's graduation day. Here's my encouragement as we leave today. Let it go. I'm not saying that you don't have bad memories. I'm not saying that it might take years. It may take years of healing. It may. But we can't live there. You know, when I cut myself, I don't go back and stare at it every day. I put medicine on it, cover it with a Band-Aid and say, let's go on. I know it'll heal over time. We've got to let the ointment of the Holy Spirit do the healing of the things that have happened in our past. And we've got to say, God, I make myself available. Pull me out of this pit that I may be used for your glory. And let me not go back and blame my family for throwing me in the pit. Let me not blame them for selling me down into Egypt. Let me not blame Egypt for falsely accusing me, the world for abusing me and making me their slave and whatever has happened to me and falsely accusing all this. But God, I make myself available to you and I ask that you would use me now for your glory. And let's watch God use us for his glory. Be a Joseph. Leave it behind and watch what the Lord will do.